Thanks for listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Rick Zingari, and I just want you to know that we've edited this podcast for brevity, so you hear all the good stuff quicker. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. One tool that cities and towns would like to use to spur development has been unavailable to them, but thanks to new legislation, they may be able to get a crack at using it. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today on Vermont Edition, we're going to talk about it. It's called TIF, Tax Increment Financing. Basically, municipalities say, we think we can boost property values in a specific part of town, we can attract private developers, but we need to make some infrastructure improvements in order to get those developers to sign on. And we think once we've done all that, they'll sign on, it will help private development, and we promise we'll be able to pay off the debt we've gone into to build that infrastructure with the increased property taxes this development is sure to bring in. Basically, that's TIF. The state controls how many TIF districts are allowed, partly because those diverted taxes don't go into the education fund. And new TIFs were barred by law since 2013. But a bill passed by the legislature this year will allow for new communities to establish TIF districts. The governor hasn't signed the bill yet, as far as we know, but he has signaled his support. We're going to talk about TIFs today to explain a little bit more about how they work and to get some perspectives from people who feel strongly about their value on both sides of that value equation. David White is president and founder of White & Burke Real Estate Investment Advisors. He's been involved in several TIF district projects around the state and was hired by a group of 7 cities and towns to lobby the legislature to raise the state cap on TIF districts. David, it's nice to have you back on the program.
It's very nice to be back, Jane.
And Representative Cynthia Browning is a Democrat representing Arlington, Manchester, Sandgate, and Sunderland. She sits on the House Ways and Means Committee and has some concerns about TIFs. Representative Browning, nice to have you on the program.
Thank you.
So, David White, maybe you could start by giving us a little bit of a better sense of what these projects are actually like by describing one of the TIF projects that you've actually worked on and what kind of infrastructure projects were involved in that and how that was supposed to attract or spur private development.
Certainly. Well, as a company, we've been involved in 4 of the TIF districts in the state. But the one we've been most deeply involved with is the one in downtown St. Albans. And that was set up, probably about 4 years ago now. Maybe it was 5 years ago it was officially established, but it really got underway roughly 4 years ago. And a real key to that has been the public infrastructure element that was essential to trying to turn around the downtown. And there are really 3 key pieces to what was done with TIF dollars. One was to build a new 370-space public parking garage owned by the municipality. A second was to do extensive streetscape renovations in the downtown to make it just simply more appealing and attractive place for investment. And the third was to acquire properties that were ripe for redevelopment, but where there were brownfield issues and where the brownfields needed to be cleaned up before they could then be attractive for private development. So those were the 3 key areas where the city made investment.
So that was about 4 years ago, you said?
Starting about 4 years ago.
And what kinds of private development has that generated?
Well, it's been substantial. Let me tell you the dollars first. At the time the TIF district was established in downtown St. Albans, the existing grand list assessed value of the entire TIF district was roughly $100 million. In the 4 years since, we've added over $40 million in new private grand list value in that downtown. So a 40% increase in only 4 years. So it's been substantial financially. 3 of the key projects that have happened, although there have been others, one is a brand new ground-up Ace Hardware store in the heart of downtown. A second is a new hotel that will be opening later this month if everything remains on schedule, a Hampton Inn, which parenthetically is the first nationally branded new hotel in any downtown in Vermont I'm aware of outside of Burlington for quite a while, for many decades actually. There may be one, but I don't know.
I think Middlebury got one not that long ago.
Not downtown, though. And so in terms of a downtown, there certainly are other branded hotels, but in terms, if you look at downtown. And then the third one is a new office building that was built by a private developer for the state. And so it's occupied by various state agencies. And those have been key in downtown, have brought, you know, great deal of new vitality to downtown, and not only the grand list growth, but you're starting to see more of the storefronts are filled, the vacancy rates are dropping, and there's other smaller investments taking place by other private property owners in town.
And some of these developments are profitable for you personally? You were involved in them?
No. We work purely as a consulting company. We do not take an equity position in any of the projects we do, at least we haven't historically. I'm not saying it's impossible for the future, but no. These are ones where we, in the case of the TIF districts, our client has been the municipality. We've worked on their behalf to structure the TIF district, to do the financial projections and financial modeling for the TIF district, and then to go through the process to attract the private developers, go through what has been primarily an RFP process to attract the private investment, and then to represent the city in the negotiations with those developers.
Representative Browning, one of the criticisms of this type of project is that it's basically giving developers free money because, as the argument goes, that kind of infrastructure improvement might otherwise be done by a private developer. Oftentimes it's streetscaping or putting in sidewalks, putting in street lamps. And the argument is that the developer would do that on his or her own if the municipality wasn't coming in and basically doing it for them and on the taxpayer's dime. Is that how you see it?
Well, there's several issues here. One is certainly that the TIFs play a role with the infrastructure investments. It lowers the cost of development for the private developer, so it makes it more likely that they'll do the project. And that's totally understandable. And if a municipality wanted to do what's called a municipal TIF, which in fact is what was done before there was an education fund, that makes sense. Then the burden of borrowing and paying back the money, making the investments, is on the local property taxpayers. So you certainly can question, are we always getting our money's worth when we make a deal with a private developer? And that's something that should always be looked at. But my concern is from the perspective of the education fund, because since Act 60, the education property tax is a statewide property tax. So when you say we're going to do this TIF district, we're going to make these investments, issue these bonds to finance the investments, and then pay the bonds back with the increase in property tax revenue based on the increase in the grand list, some of that increase in property tax revenue that's going to pay off the bonds is foregone revenue from the education fund. And that means the more TIFs you have, the more foregone revenue there is from the ed fund, the higher property taxes are for everybody. That is the crux of the issue. And some people will say, yeah, but if we hadn't done this project, there would have been no extra revenue, no grand list growth. And when you look at it from the perspective of a single downtown, that may be true. Without this package, without all these subsidies and infrastructure investments, we would not have had a hotel downtown. However, the hotel might have been built someplace else, and that would have meant there would have been statewide grand list growth and an increase in education property tax revenue from elsewhere. So that's really the crux of it. And the economists and the Joint Fiscal Office feel that there is a cost to the ed fund, there is foregone revenue, because sometimes the TIFs just make a difference locationally. So it certainly can mean that a downtown gets development it wouldn't otherwise have, and that's a good thing. But to the extent that some of those investments or similar investments might have happened elsewhere, from the perspective of the ed fund, there is foregone revenue. So my concern is, before we authorize too many more TIFs, we really understand the cost of the ed fund and whether we're doing this important economic development support in the right way for all Vermonters, for property taxpayers, not just for particular towns.
Representative Browning, I hear what you're saying about this idea that a TIF district may attract private developers to the downtown area where the basically the borders of the TIF have been established. But you're saying that doesn't guarantee that development might not have occurred outside of that district anyway. And so there is the potential for lost revenue for the state, because if, as you put it, a hotel might have been built on the outskirts of town outside of the district and is instead built inside, then you lose the revenue from that hotel. But that seems to me, I mean, it's difficult on both sides of this conversation, but we're speaking in hypotheticals. What data do you have that suggests that that kind of development would occur even if there weren't a TIF district put in place?
Well, remember, we're talking about a very small number of TIF districts in Vermont. What is it, like 7? So it's not like we have enough to do regression analysis. But I can tell you that the legislative economist Tom Cavett said that he had testified before the House Ways and Means Committee, and his testimony was that his conclusion was that there was a locational effect coming from the TIF subsidies, that mostly it was shifting development around from different places. So it's kind of a zero-sum game. Now, I'm not saying that's always true. And I know that, for instance, in the St. Albans example, there were so many different pieces to that puzzle that had to come together, and the TIF was part of it. But if the other pieces hadn't been there too, it would not have happened as it did. So I think sometimes people fixate on the TIFs as if that's the key to everything, when it's really the larger pieces of the puzzle, the anchor tenant like the state office building or something like that, that makes the development work. To my mind, one of the most important conditions for economic development in Vermont as a whole, in addition to statewide infrastructure investments in transportation, water and sewer, and telecommunications, one of the key things is low and stable tax rates. And that includes property tax rates. And when we had proposals to increase the number of TIFs by 14, which we did not do, we did 6, that's, if we had done 14, according to the Joint Fiscal Office, that's coming up on $25 million in foregone revenue to the education fund. And that's like 5 cents or 3-4 cents on the property tax rate. So that was the reason for my concern. And I must say that my concern is shared by the legislature, because in the language authorizing more TIFs, they put in instructions to do an analysis as to whether this is the right way to support downtown development or other kinds of development. I put it to you that the reason why we're doing it this way is that the state doesn't have enough money in its general fund or in the capital fund to take care of its own issues. And so we're putting the cost of this important support for downtown economic development on the education fund, and I think that's the wrong place to put it. The education fund is supposed to be supporting education. Even the increase in TIFs we did, which is 6, may bring the cost in foregone revenue to $16 million. The total state allocation.
But Representative Browning, let me ask you, and then I want to get David White back in here, but when you talk about the potential foregone revenue that is not going to the state in the form of education taxes, Act 60 was basically imposed on towns, this statewide pool of money for education funding. And we're not arguing Act 60 and education funding today by any means. But if towns can't do TIF, can't use that tool at their disposal, aren't you basically removing a tool from the town's ability to do the kind of development they want, when the state energy plans and other places have all said you'd like to spur development within your downtowns? That seems to be a value of Vermont. So if you don't allow these communities to have and establish TIFs, aren't you removing a tool at their disposal?
Well, one of the things S-135 did was it authorized towns to do a municipal TIF, where they can do the same kind of maneuver but pay back the infrastructure bonds solely from the increase in municipal tax revenue. So they absolutely have that tool now at their disposal. It would be less money because it doesn't include the Ed Fund revenue. And I understand what you're saying. But that doesn't change the fact that one of the key things we hear about all the time in terms of the cost of doing business in Vermont is higher property taxes. So if we think this is important, I think the state has a responsibility to create a revolving loan fund in the capital bill to allocate general fund revenue. if this development is so crucial, it's going to generate extra general fund revenue in the form of income taxes and sales taxes too. So why can't we be funding it partly with that? My concern is the scale, the numbers that they're talking about, and the impact on the education fund. I think you're making a vicious cycle. You're saying in the name of economic development, we're going to do this because it's good, but then it forces up property tax rate, which mitigates against economic development. We have to break that cycle. And I think the state needs to take more responsibility for funding the assistance to downtowns that they need through its own resources, not on the education property tax.
David,
and by the way, there was one more point I wanted to make, which is that the cost of $16 million on the education fund that could come with the existing TIFs and the new TIFs, the total transportation allocation in the ed fund is $18 million. So we're now getting close to what we allocate to transportation with what we're allocating to TIFs. I think we need to be careful about that.
So, David White, you were involved in lobbying the legislature to lift the cap on TIFs. And, you know, we've just heard Representative Browning's concerns about this and that this kind of financing is being done on the backs of Vermont school children, basically, by taking this potential revenue out of the ed fund. What do you think?
Well, you know, I did not, I'm sorry to say, have the benefit of hearing Tom Cavett's testimony on this matter, but I'm aware of national studies that have been done on TIF districts elsewhere, and I think it's important for people to understand that TIF in Vermont runs very differently than any place else in the country. And in other places, for example, they will let you take a piece of the income tax and sales tax as well as property taxes. You know, it's different in different jurisdictions, different states. And in some states, it's very clear from the studies that have been done that municipalities actually do compete with each other to try to attract development. And there are examples where there's an existing industry in one town that needs to grow and the other town offers them a stronger TIF package and the industry moves out of one to another. And in that kind of instance, I think there's substantial evidence that, in fact, things might have been built elsewhere. But I'm not aware personally, and I've yet to have anybody show me an example in Vermont where that has occurred, where I'm not aware of a single project that some developer was contemplating doing someplace else and that was then lured into a TIF district through TIF. So while it's a theoretical concern, I don't think I haven't seen reality of that here on the ground. And as I look at the challenge, I think the fundamental disagreement comes down to whether or not you believe these projects would have happened otherwise or not. And I think the evidence is pretty strong that they would not have otherwise happened. And until I've shown some evidence that suggests they would have otherwise happened, I think the evidence is quite strong to the other side. Let me be specific about that, because this challenge was clear to me early on as we began to lobby for this in the legislature this year. So I went back to the seven municipalities that I represented, and there's seven of the most significant downtowns, core communities in our state outside of Chittenden County. It included Bennington, Rutland, Springfield, Brattleboro, Newport, St. Johnsbury, and Montpelier. And I asked them two questions. I said, okay, how much new development has happened in your downtown in the last 5 years? And how much renovation has happened in your downtown in the last 5 years? And the answer, and we're talking about seven of the most significant downtowns in the state over a five-year period, only two new construction projects during that time. One is a Dollar General store in Bennington, which is not driven by real estate economics. It's driven by the expected profitability of the operating business. And the other is a new headquarters for Vermont State Colleges in Montpelier, also not driven by real estate economics. That's it. No new construction, seven of the most important downtowns. And the second question in terms of renovation, only one major renovation in 5 years, and that was the Brooks House in Brattleboro, which, you know, as I think we all know, after a fire had substantial public subsidies went into it, new market tax credits, historic tax credits, millions and millions of dollars. Granted, no TIF, but it required substantial public subsidy for it to be viable. Beyond that, in all the rest of the downtowns, a smattering, $100,000 renovation here, a couple hundred thousand dollars there, but not much. If this development was going to occur anyway, wouldn't it be going on? And it's not. And I think that evidence is pretty compelling. And let me talk about why. And it's simply because the cost of development in most of Vermont is every bit as high or darn near as high as it is in downtown Burlington. But the rents and the values that result are half or less, and the rents simply aren't enough to pay the bill.
Let's go to Christian, who's calling in from Montreal. Hi, Christian. Go right ahead.
Hi, I have a question for Representative Browning. Many municipalities in New York are located, not in New York, in Vermont, are located near the border with New York or with other states. And I was wondering if in those situations it's really a zero-sum game, because a lot of development could be pulled over the border.
Christian, thanks for the call. What do you think, Representative Browning?
Well, I think that is the root of the conclusion of the legislative economist, is that there's a locational effect from these kinds of subsidies. So if Christian was meaning that if we don't subsidize them, they'll go over the border into New York and get a subsidy there, that is certainly an issue that we need to look at. And I'm not at all opposed to figuring out ways to support downtown development. My issue is with this question of having an impact on the ed fund, because then you're creating a kind of a vicious cycle. In the name of economic development, you're driving up property tax rates, which creates negative conditions for all economic activity, particularly development. So I think we need to figure out a different way to fund this activity, because the ed fund cannot serve as a piggy bank to cover this cost for all municipalities in Vermont. And Mr. White just said this is a problem for all municipalities, for all towns in terms of the cost. The ed fund can't do this. The ed fund is for education.
But can you explain again, just to clarify, why you think, let's say in my town gets approval to have a TIF district, and voters have to approve this. This is something that goes before the voters generally, because it's their tax money that's on the hook here, basically. So let's say my town approves a downtown TIF, and there's some infrastructure improvement that the town does, and then that's going to be paid back through the enhanced property taxes of the private development that's expected to come in. And so some private development does come in, and in the example we've been using, let's say a hotel is built. Why is that private development, which boosts the grand list, as you said, the taxable properties and the value of them in my town, but that money is then being paid back to that loan that we gave the town to do those infrastructure improvements until the loan is paid back? Why is that going to increase my property taxes or my neighbor's property taxes in a town over? Why are you saying that that actually increases property taxes?
Well, it isn't just me saying it. It is the conclusion of Tom Kivett, the legislative economist, and the Joint Fiscal Office. And you want to remember that everything we do in the legislature and in state government is based on analysis by the Joint Fiscal Office and the testimony of the legislative economist. So it does rest on this question of, would similar economic activity and investments have occurred elsewhere? In other words, when that new hotel is built, if it had not been built in your town, might it have been built on the outskirts of your town, outside of the TIF district, or in the town nearby? And I believe it's the conclusion of much of the analysis that is the main effect of TIFs, that it relocates economic activity into the district. That does not change the fact that the downtown districts really need this help. Mr. White is correct that you don't have a lot going on in many downtowns. My point is that if it's at all true, if there's even a chance that it's true, that the hotel might have been built on the outskirts instead of in downtown, but for the TIF, it's certainly good to have it downtown. But in terms of the perspective of the ed fund, the grand list would have increased and the ed fund would have gotten the extra revenue. But under the TIF, the ed fund does not get that revenue. And now I certainly
understand. So it's not that my taxes go up. It's that there's not additional money coming in that might lower my property taxes.
It's foregone tax revenue. And anytime you have foregone tax revenue, that has an impact on the property taxes,
sure.
on what they would have been. I also will say that when a district votes for the TIF bond, if the development does not pan out and the infrastructure investments have been made, the local property taxpayers must repay the bond. So they have some risk there, and that's one reason it's very important to be sure about your private partners.
Yes, and certainly also one of the reasons why typically this has to be done through a vote of the townspeople, right? So that the actual people who are essentially investing their own money are the ones approving the TIF, right?
Yes, that's correct. But I will also point out that since there is, according to JFO and The Economist, an impact on the statewide education property tax and the Ed Fund, those voters did not vote for it.
That's
and
right.
That's one of the problems.
So, David White, we got a note from Charles in Burlington, and there's been a conversation happening in Burlington about development and what kind of municipal development might be going on or might be able to go on in a TIF district to help augment or encourage that private development. And Charles writes, a telling example of how TIF districts shift costs from influential developers to small property owners is Don Sinek's Burlington Town Center. He designed a facility that requires two new streets but was loath to pay for them. Wanting to subsidize his town center, the mayor and the city council agreed to hand him $22 million for his street and frontage improvements borrowed from bondholders and to be paid back over 20 years with a lien on the tax flow from the increase in property values. That's the TIF. In that 20 years, school costs and municipal services will go up in cost, but the tax revenue flowing from the Sinek's project will be, quote, frozen at the pre-development level as far as the state ed fund and the municipal general fund is concerned, with taxpayers outside of the TIF district picking up all of these predictable costs. In a word, Charles Wright, TIF is a scam and a tax liability shift from the politically connected developers to the politically unconnected small property owners. And Mark says, why is it that TIF financing is required to help private developers do their work? Doesn't the demand for TIF suggest then that the cost of development in Vermont is too high to start with? Why are developers getting these subsidies? So how do you respond to Mark and Charles?
Well, certainly the cost of development in Vermont is quite high. There's no question about that. And that is a huge challenge, particularly when we've got a state where, you know, the demographics are such that we're basically flatlined in terms of any growth. And the only real demographic growth is in the greater Chittenden County area. And we're actually seeing shrinkage elsewhere. And you combine that with the high cost of development, and it's extremely hard. And that's why you're not seeing development for the most part. I mean, there's certainly exceptions around the state. I'm not intimately familiar. I'm not involved with what's going on with the downtown project and Sinek's project. So I don't know the economics of that personally and really can't speak to that directly, except to the extent that those projects are staggeringly difficult to put together. There's an enormous amount of risk involved in that. And I think it's very easy to say those darn developers, you know, they're making all the big bucks. They're also taking enormous risks. And sometimes those projects don't work out and they end up losing their shirts on the thing. And then when you're looking
at... But that's the business, right? I mean, that's the business you're in if you're
sure,
a private developer.
Absolutely. But to make it financially feasible, certainly it part of the challenge of TIF or the benefit of TIF is to try to mitigate that to the extent that it starts to close the economic gap. And again, I can't speak to the downtown project. But let me say this, that to the extent that Representative Browning is concerned that development might have occurred elsewhere, and while I've yet to see evidence, you know, she keeps citing the Joint Fiscal Office and the state economist, and I've not seen the evidence that they ostensibly base their conclusions on. But to the extent that that might have happened, and keep in mind that under the new legislation, 30% of the new education tax revenue will be going directly to the education fund. And
because
so
you're not allowed to take all of it back for the TIF financing.
You may only – under current legislation, it's only 75% – it's up to 75%. Under the new legislation passed this year, it's 70% for new TIF districts. And so that 30% surely is enough to cover those developments that theoretically might have happened anyway, because I don't see any evidence that, in fact, there's a single project I can cite where it would have happened anyway.
Representative Browning, we just have a couple seconds left, but this whole discussion we're having, the governor is expected to sign the omnibus bill that included this lifting of the cap on TIF districts, but all of this is held up until we have a budget through, right? The TIF expansion bill, S-3135, cannot go into effect until we have a budget. So is this all a moot conversation until then?
No, I don't believe so. I think that we're going to work out all of the problems with the budget and the education fund yield, and S-135 will go into effect. I think it makes good new criteria and analysis for the TIFs. I think it would have been better to look at the effect on the Ed Fund before we expanded the number of TIFs rather than after. But it's good that that language was included, and I think it's a validation of the concerns I've expressed here today Mr. White's advocacy notwithstanding.
Representative Cynthia Browning is a Democrat representing Arlington, Manchester, Sandgate, and Sunderland, and she sits on the House Ways and Means Committee. Representative, nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you so much.
David White is president and founder of White & Burke Real Estate Investment Advisors. He has been involved in some TIF district projects around the state and was hired by a group of 7 cities and towns to lobby the legislature to raise that state cap on TIF districts. Thanks very much, David.
Thank you.